When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Charlie. And we're two 20-somethings that reread our previously favourite childhood book, but with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we are reading chapter
23
Horcruxes with special guest Neil.
Hello.
So grab a glass and listen along on this drunken reminiscent journey. Hannah's holding a gun to my head. Please help me.
Enjoy! Choke into the mic and die.
Mm-hmm.
Hi!
Hello!
We can't do the whole, like, making Neil wait to say hi.
Because they're on video. They've seen him.
Or, in editing, we could just censor him.
Yes. Like, guess who the guest is. Yeah.
Guess who it is. It's him.
It's Neil. Neil's here for his annual episode.
Hello, everybody. Sixth book. You're nearly there.
Yay. We can stop running a transphobic podcast soon.
Oh, God.
Free us. Help.
Oh dear.
How are you, Neil?
Yeah,
I'm all right, thank
you.
What do you want to know?
How are you?
I'm
How's
fine.
Life? How have you been since the last time you featured on Goblet of Wine?
Goodness, since the last time I was on Goblet of Wine,
that would have been a year and a half ago.
I've started a new job.
Great.
I work in a completely different industry now.
Great.
Yep.
Other than that, it's pretty much the same as ever. Go to a lot of concerts. I listen to a lot of music. About it.
God, you're insufferable.
That's my life.
Great. Do you still love time travel? Because you sure do still get a lot of messages about time travel.
Yes.
This is your legacy.
It's great. I still get the occasional recommendation from someone who's like, have you watched this time travel thing? And I'll just make a note of it and write and watch it at some point.
Aww. Amazing.
Yeah.
Right, let's kick off with... Oh, Charlie, how are you?
Sick.
Oh.
Since we last recorded yesterday,
which is also the next episode you'll see.
Whoa. Time travel.
Talk about time travel. Yeah, I have gotten increasingly sick. Mostly it's just a sore throat, so at least I don't feel sick, but
she's under a contractual obligation to me and must continue working.
We
have terrible labor laws here at Goblet of Wine.
You're basically Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
Jeffrey Bezos. Yeah, so I'm like slowly losing my voice, which is exactly what you want when you run a podcast. So is it at least like sexy phlegm like Phoebe?
It was actually when you did your hello into the mic test. Yeah.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm fine. Yeah. Nothing new. Absolutely nothing new to report.
Since yesterday, I can't believe that there's been no breaking news.
Mm.
I got a really good night's sleep last night.
That is huge.
Which is rare for me. I got nearly 9 hours.
It's because I was spooning you.
It was. We cuddled up.
I was relegated to the sofa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Neil, what are we drinking this episode?
Distressingly, we're drinking something called Dragon Soup.
It's very fitting for Harry Potter.
For our American listeners, this is basically the UK equivalent of Four Loko. It is it is basically incredibly strong, incredibly caffeinated, and incredibly colourful.
Yeah, I really...
How many E numbers are in this?
All of them.
I really regret that I've already had two coffees today.
That was foolish.
And I'm happy to say we've purchased 8 flavours of Dragon Soup.
Yay!
I hope you're on a list after doing that.
I definitely am.
Yes.
I definitely am.
Can I also just say that I love that we're drinking this out of some really gorgeous antique
beautiful
glasses.
Stuff.
It's like, never before has anyone drunk a Dragon Soup out of something to this calibre.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Cheers!
Cheers! Blue, pineapple, and kiwi, I think we're on. That is awful.
That's disgusting.
Mm. Discovered this stuff at uni.
I think I genuinely used to drink...
No. Not often. It was like a joke occasional thing.
I mean, I get it if you're going on a night out and you need like sugar, caffeine, and alcohol all in one hit.
I honestly, the first time I had a can of the stuff, I felt like I was floating for about 6 hours.
Excellent. I really can't wait to run back to Suffolk.
You are going to be running, yeah.
Yeah.
We're actually, people are going to listen to this episode and be like, I know they usually talk fast, but we're going to sound like Lorelai and Rory when they talk to each other, like,
maybe then it won't be a 3 hour episode for Neil, purely because of
the speed of walking.
Yeah, the tempo. I actually like it. I definitely could not drink a volume off it, which is great.
Because we've got 8 cans.
But, like, I don't actually, like, I'm not, like, that taste bad.
If you'd like to purchase this, UK friends, first of all, don't. Second of all, find your closest dodgy off-license.
It's my favourite place will to have be. It. Okay, it's not that I hate it. It's that, like, that clearly is just so much artificial sweetness, which is the thing I
hate most.
Oh, God,
I knew you were going to, like, pull the sugar card.
But I don't like that in drinks, so it's everything I don't like.
Yeah.
But I can see myself drinking it in uni to prep for a night out.
And it does remind me of the cocktail I accidentally ordered in America that was just blended up gummies.
Oh my God. Yeah. That gave me like a simultaneous brain freeze, but also like... It made me twitch with that.
If
you want to see the footage of that, that is over on our Patreon. I think it's in vlog
2 or 3.
Let's do our patrons. Neil, you have to join in too.
Oh, absolutely.
So, a jollof rice size thank you to Jamie.
A dinosaur size thank you to Dana.
An absolutely enormous size thank you to Arthur, who's a producer level Patreon.
Well done.
There we go.
I've also just realised it doesn't say Jamie. Well, it might do. I might have copied it down wrong. It might say Jame.
Which is also Jamie, to be fair.
Oh, is it?
That's
fine.
How,
it's
that's
Jamie.
How, Jamie Lannister is spelled.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Did you not notice that in all of the books that you read?
No, clearly my brain did that thing that it did with noughts and crosses where it just like switches it.
That's how Jamie Lannister is spelled.
It's the dyslexia.
It's
Hannah.
The dyslexia. An egotistical size thank you to Emma, who has upgraded their pledge.
An AliExpress size thank you to Aline.
A totally tubular thank you to Tom.
And a golem size thank you to Georgius Feather. Thank you all for joining the Patreon and for supporting us and getting access to bonus episodes that often feature Neil.
Hello.
We let him on the podcast more often over on Patreon because he's everyone's favourite and it's sad.
It's so sad. It's really just misogynistic.
It really is.
Thanks for the love,
I'm surprised
everyone.
No one at the Potless thing the other day when they came up to us was like,
Where's Neil?
Neil?
Well, one of them did mention me, to be fair.
Yeah, as that guy in the Northumberland episode.
I'll take that. We take those.
Yeah, I'm amazed no one came up to you like, oh my God, are you Neil's partner?
Cries.
We also have a couple of lovely reviews to read out. So this one comes from, I am a user of this app, who says, just absolutely lovely. Not only does this give me all the Harry Potter I need to survive, but it also just makes me feel cozy. I often listen to an episode before bed because Harry Potter makes me feel good and it's nice to feel smiley at night, in brackets, all thanks to you two. I say this as if I don't listen to episodes during any free time I get. Hannah and Charlie join me when I'm doing dishes or work and anything in between. Separate from HP, this calms my stress of having to grow up. Basically, if these two disasters can survive early adulthood, so can I.
I can't decide if I'm so offended or so touched. These two disasters can survive early adulthood?
Thank you so much for being a comfort and bringing laughter to my chaotic life.
Aww. This review comes from Anima Unicorn, who says, you are my therapy. I'm 10.
Interesting.
In brackets, do not call child protection services. See, you say that, but we might. And always when I argue with my dad, I always immediately go and listen to you guys and I immediately feel better. Like therapy. Actually, way better than therapy, not going to lie. I'm going to England this summer and I'm going to send you some Icelandic alcohol. Yes, I'm from Iceland.
Nice.
No, but
don't listen if you're 10.
Please. Yeah.
And also therapy is pretty good as well.
And you'll probably need it after listening to us at 10.
Yeah. It's like the people who listen while they're pregnant. And I'm like, don't. I don't know what we're doing to those in utero babies.
I'm also questioning how a 10-year-old is going to buy alcohol to send to us.
Many Iceland's questions. Just a really chill country. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what Iceland's alcohol is.
Ice.
Yes, thank you. But still the point stands. You do have to ask your parents if you want to listen to this podcast under the age of 16.
But you do lovely beer in Iceland. So when you're old enough to drink it, definitely try some of that.
Or just try it now.
And also, go to therapy.
Yes.
Underage drinking is cool.
We put such good messages out in the
world.
Yes,
we do. We also have some more answers to more questions that we asked a million episodes ago.
How exciting.
So today's question that we're revisiting is, do you have a weird ship like Lavender and McLagan? Do you ship Lavclagan? McLav? So... Hannah says, Wood and Me, does that count?
Yes.
No, that counts, but more so Wood and Me.
Wood and Me.
Yeah.
A name I am never, not even going to attempt, says Terry Boot and Anthony Goldstein. They are deeply in love, I assure you. I absolutely agree with this. After reading when I was younger, that fan fiction that was set at Hogwarts whilst the trio were off fighting. And it's very clear Terry Boot and Anthony Goldstein are in love.
Do Terry Boot and Anthony Goldstein have enough like characterization in the books to write anything about?
Neil, you don't seem to be understanding fan fiction in the slightest.
No.
I guess you can paint whatever you want onto them.
Neil, there is an entire subsect of TikTok that cosplays and has created a whole life around Mary MacDonald, who is mentioned twice in passing in all 7 books.
Wow.
You've got to admire the creativity.
You really do these days.
It's
do you, would you like to read this one?
Yeah, go on.
But before that, just to be clear, Hannah wasn't being xenophobic, refusing to say a foreign name. It is just a username that's like a bunch of random letters.
Oh, yeah. I should have pointed that out. Like, I'm not saying that.
She's not like that filthy foreigner. You don't get your name said.
This one is from Herbs. Herbs says, Slughorn and Flitwick. Dueling in Potions Masters, Hogwarts power couple.
I love like it.
I'm going to throw it out there. Film Slughorn and film Flitwick. Yeah, I ship that.
Yeah.
Book Slughorn. I don't ship with anyone. He doesn't deserve happiness.
We ship him in a new bromance with Hagrid. They're not in love, but they have a Banshees of Inisherin before
they
it all went wrong bromance.
Do. They absolutely do. But you liked me yesterday.
Yeah. Although, just to be clear, just to update you, it's no longer Slughorn. It's now Snugglehorn.
Snugglehorn.
I love that.
I genuinely said that.
I love Snugglehorn.
Snugglehorn.
Yeah. Leo says, McGonagall and Augusta Longbottom. I will die on this hill.
Yes.
Which one's Augusta?
Correct. Neville's grandmother.
The one in the hospital? No, the one that raised him.
Mother.
That's his mother.
Yeah. Get out, you fake fan.
I know these things.
I love that one. Ray says, Mrs. Fig and Grubbly Plank, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Because we said Grubbly Plank would be a visiting member of the outdoor thruple. But I can see her going home to Mrs. Fig and the cats.
Yes, they're polyamorous.
Yeah.
Just like us.
Fernande Freund 511. Says, sorry, unrelated. I've been on your socials, but seeing your guys' video is so crazy because just seeing people actually speak after all these years is crazy to me. I love it so much. XOXO Gossip Girl. It's cute.
I really like that just for the sign off.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Sammy says, I hadn't until you called it Lavclagan. I can't even say it. But now I believe they're right for each other.
Yes. Mm. And Frog, with 2 G's, says, not related again, but I love the new video format, and I spat my hot chocolate out when Charlie says, I love it when my slaves battle. Love you guys so much. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Found you from Herd Art Materials.
Oh, wow. Shout out to them.
So nice.
Lovely people.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I would love to see people spit takes with us. Like, that's a question. That could be a question for this episode. What have we said that made you spit out your drink?
Very self-involved question, but absolutely.
Are we ready for another soup?
Oh, my God, no.
What is wrong with you?
Get out.
We've got 8 soups to drink.
We don't have to. It is not a contractual obligation.
I do have to.
I do at least want to try them all.
Yes.
I won't lie.
Yeah.
I would offer you half of mine, but you would get sick.
I think just down it, Fresher.
No. I've got a sore throat. I can't be downing alcohol.
But it's got so much sugar in it, it will, soothe your throat. That's how that works.
She's going to die.
I'm pretty
tomorrow.
Sure that's the opposite.
That's how that works, for sure, for sure.
Nah. Neil, would you like to tell us why you chose chapter 23 Horcruxes, or would you like to wait till the end? This is always up to you.
I can tell you why.
Please tell us why.
It was quite an interesting chapter.
Great!
Wow!
Fascinating.
I reread Half-Blood Prince probably about a year ago for the first time.
You haven't reread Deathly Hallows yet,
not
have
yet,
you?
No.
Because you kind of did a cluster and then stopped.
Yes, I wanted to wait for the podcast to kind of get a bit closer, so then the book was a bit fresher
nice.
In my mind. Yeah, I hadn't reread Half-Blood Prince since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good book, first of all.
Yes.
I love the twists and turns it takes. And there wasn't a chapter like the time travel one that really jumped out at me, like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
But the Horcruxes chapter offers a lot of things to talk about.
100%.
So that's the one I wanted to go for.
Yes, thank you.
You were like, I want to subject them to me for as long as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want the beefiest chapter so I can talk and talk and talk. Beefy.
Beef.
All right, chapter 23, Horcruxes. Mm. Sorry, I'm invading your personal space. I'll go this side.
That's fine.
Yeah, so, we're not touching each other for pleasure. We just have to be in the frame.
It's not a big area we have here.
No. This is the most Neil's ever been touched
by
women.
We could, both of us have, like, room here. It just would look a bit weird.
Oh, there she goes. She's daring to change the status quo.
Come back!
No, actually, can you move a bit further? Yeah.
Go away.
Come back.
Come back.
Come back.
Come back.
Please, sir.
I'm doing
May
the
May I have some more?
Ooh.
Sponsor us, Dragon Soup.
Hold mine.
They actually do merch.
What?
Wow!
Yeah. I discovered this when I was looking for Dragon Soup retailers.
We're going over. Colours of right at the end it all went wrong.
Someone got soup.
We're gonna be sticky forever now. That's it. That's better. That's better than the other one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, considerably.
Chapter 23 Horcruxes. So the chapter kicks off straight off the back of the last chapter. Harry's running up from Hagrid's back up to the dormitory and gets the fat lady, but she's angry at him and tells him she changed the password at midnight, so he'll have to sleep out there.
She shuts such a shitster. I love
but
it.
But also, I love that it's like, you know who's the biggest security risk at Hogwarts who people are trying to kill?
Harry Potter.
No, and but the fat lady's like, yeah, sleep in the corridor, bitch.
But the point is, it could be someone Polly's using as Harry.
Well, yeah, no. But I love that it didn't actually change. She is just being a shithead. She's
Why do the common room entrances not have, like, you know how the Goblet of Fire had an anti-charm, a ring around it? Where if you step through it while you're under a potion or a charm or whatever, it would dissolve.
Because Hogwarts security is shit.
Right, it is just that then. There's no actual reason.
It's just...
But I don't know whether that applies... Because the only actual break-in we really see is under an invisibility cloak, which the charm wouldn't kick off. And I'm not sure those charms apply to being in an animagus form, because that does seem to bypass a lot of that charmed magic.
Yeah. I guess because it is still you.
Exactly, yeah.
And I also think that, like, the common room passwords are more to keep other houses out, because any security is actually on the castle itself. Like, it was, you know, a one-off that Sirius Black got in.
And again, it's because he was an animagus, so I'm wondering if that bypasses most security.
Yeah, but I reckon the passwords are just, like, to stop other houses.
Yeah.
Like,
because the teachers would always know every password, but every teacher has to be able to get into every common room in an emergency.
Yeah.
I do think that it's, like, a missed opportunity that there was never any, like, houses, like, raiding each other as, like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like school kind of like rivalries, but between houses.
It only happened once, didn't it, when they went to talk to Malfoy in Chamber of Secrets.
And in book 7, I don't want to spoil it, but Harry breaks into the Ravenclaw common room.
No, but I literally mean in terms of like an actual thing where like houses would try and like befriend people and like get the week's password, and then they'd like go and like throw toilet roll everywhere or
something.
Yeah,
like what if you were dating someone and got the password of
Someone? Like, I think that's like a fun school thing that absolutely would happen. Like, it would be a bit of a like challenge, like a bit like on like your last day of school, like
mess around
you would like mess around like and like do pranks and stuff. I feel like they absolutely would do pranks on other houses by like
Harry's just too wrapped up in his own shit to notice any of the cool stuff that
it probably happens in like almost other scene that a bunch of like Ravenclaws get in and like cause chaos in the common room, and Harry's just like staring at Ginny
side note. At this point,
sidebar.
There's a point just at the beginning of this chapter where Harry says he can feel the Felix Felicis wearing off.
Yeah.
Do we think it's just placebo?
We've had this conversation, Neil.
I thought you might have. What was your conclusion?
We don't think it is because, like, paths are lit up and...
But is it just confidence?
Things like that. But we believe it is almost the exact same if it's placebo, because Ron in the previous chapter says the line, oh, it feels great. Hermione says, you didn't take it. And he said, I thought I did. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just made me wonder if the reason that they make it sound like such a complicated potion is so that people think, oh, I won't bother making that. That's really difficult. But actually, it's just nonsense. It's just rubbish.
I think it's like partially placebo. I do think it actually does something. But I think then a lot of it is like a self-fulfilling.
It's
like
just meth. Yeah.
I think the partial thing it does is the timing thing, because even if you had all the confidence in the world, the timing of Harry to walk through the portrait hole at the same time as Ginny, that's not to do with confidence.
That's
to do with the timing of it was the right second that he chose to walk through the common room door.
That is true.
Yeah.
So Nearly Headless Nick floats along and tells him that Dumbledore is back because Harry's like, well, I will go to Dumbledore if he was fucking here. And Nearly Headless Nick's like, yeah, he's back. And Harry's like, brilliant, and just sprints off straight to Dumbledore's office.
Although we have a really great bit of like almost like airplane style humour where Nick's like, oh, Dumbledore's back, the bloody Baron told me, and Harry's like, oh my god, great, where is he? And he's like, the bloody Baron?
He's just clanging around the tower, and Harry's like, no!
A hospital, it's a place with sick people.
So Harry's sprinting off to Dumbledore's office and manages to get straight in, and Dumbledore's like, clearly very confused, but in Dumbledore fashion, just like, Harry, what an interesting time for this encounter. Like, it's 2 a.m. What are you doing in my office?
Sidebar that I forgot to mention, the fact that the Gryffindor password was tapeworm.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
It's tapeworm.
What? Tapeworm. Why not flobberworm?
It's tapeworm.
Make
it's
it
been
magical.
Flobberworm before.
It has been flobberworm
so
before.
Gross. Why is it worms?
And it's just weird, like, fantasy books always make an effort to not use normal words for anything as well. But why tapeworm?
Maybe someone had a tapeworm, and she just found it hilarious.
She's just shame. Although I suppose because the password didn't change, she was just making it up.
Yeah.
So that was clearly the first thing that came to her head.
No. She says the real password. She said it's still tapeworm.
Oh, it's still tapeworm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dumbledore's... Harry's like, oh, Dumbledore seemed really exhausted. It's like, it's really late and he's really old.
He's just got back from travelling,
literally,
man.
2 o'clock in the morning.
How old is he meant to be, like 100 and something?
He's 150.
That's an old man.
Which is like, this is so presumptuous of Harry to be like, yeah, he'll see me now. This is like...
I mean, I guess he's really excited.
I think
Harry on the come
old.
Down from Felix Felicis is going to be like us after 8 Dragon Soups. He's
This is hitting.
So because Dumbledore is really excited that Harry's got the memory and really pleased, they go literally straight into the memory, dive straight in, into the point where Slughorn is really flattering Tom. He's like, not just like, oh, you'll go far. Mm. He's like, you will be Minister of Magic within 12 years. I know it. La, 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 la.
Also, side note on this one, just a general point. When she came up with the idea of memories being removable and viewable in the Pensieve, that's one of the best ideas for getting through boring exposition I've ever heard.
Oh yeah.
In most other books you'd get like either an awkward flashback chapter or you'd get like someone telling you something.
Yeah.
In this you get to experience the scene directly and in a very like normal way through your character's eyes.
Yeah.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I wish someone else would nick it because it is really good.
So this is where I did some maths.
Oh, okay.
Because so Snugglehorn
Snugglehorn
says that he expects him that he could become minister within 15 to 20 years.
Okay.
So I was thinking about this because I know that there's then like a throw-in plot convenience line afterwards about how Tom just that wouldn't appeal to him. He's not much of a politician. I think that's just why. Give an actual reason why. Like, it's just a bit of a, like, to explain why he didn't go that route. Oh, it's just not for him. But I'm like, I think that's pretty weak. Because I was like, would that not make so much more sense?
I thought this too.
Because if it took him 15 to 20 years from when he finished Hogwarts at, like, 18 to become Minister of Magic, at the latest he would be 38 by the time he would become Minister for Magic and essentially be able to take over.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly young.
That's really young, yeah.
Versus he was 55 when the curse backfired when he attacked Harry originally, by which point he still hadn't actually fully taken over. He was close, but so that's 55 versus 38. So that took him 37 years instead of maximum 20 years if he went the politician route. Versus he was 71 when he actually does finally die,
which is not that old.
No. Yeah.
Did a terrible job at immortality.
Yeah, but like, so he's 71 when he dies. Mm. By which point he basically had taken over, you know, at that point he'd taken over the government, blah, blah, blah. He was like pretty much all there. He just had to knock off one child. Mm. So that is...
To do what?
Knock off one child. Stop having a perverted mind.
Oh, no, just funny. Carry on.
So that's 53 years to overthrow the government.
That feels like a long
time.
When
he could have just become the government. 20
years. Yeah. And he could have just become the minister and then done a Hitler, you know.
And he also didn't have to do it in such like an evil way from the beginning. It would have been better to go in as like the smarmy, handsome politician and then slowly, slowly change the laws. Oh, I've changed the law here so that you can actually attack muggles. Yeah. Oh, I've changed the law here so that muggleborns aren't allowed in Hogwarts. But by this point, I've already got most of you on the side. That's the smarter way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the more time efficient, because didn't we establish that he spent 20 years working at Borgin and Burkes?
We could not work it out. It's a bit of a plot.
I think there was a 20-year gap.
There's a 20-year gap
where he was supposed to be working there. So are you really telling me that he's like, I'm just not suited to politics, but I'll be a shop assistant for 20 years instead of becoming Minister for Magic?
He would be the best like, upseller of all time.
He could have still done all the Horcruxes stuff while he was Minister for Magic. Like, he's got all the power to, like, delegate his time and
he's
then be like...
He's got the power! And, like, even if he wanted to take, like, 5 years out to do some evil mischief before going
evil
into
mischief.
Politics, like, that's still only 25 years.
Small crimes.
Versus the 53 years.
He's actually a terrible dictator. Like, he's a really bad, immortal dictator.
Inefficient way to take over the world.
Bear in mind, Dumbledore lives to 150 and he dies at half his age at 71. Like, you've done a terrible job.
Yeah. Mm. Voldemort, really not actually quite competent.
No. Terrible.
I do think his the charisma he gives off in these memories and stuff is quite interesting.
Would have been a lot suited to politics.
It would have been. Yeah. And it's like... The way that he manipulates Slughorn into giving him the memory.
Yeah.
Oh, not the memory even, but just talking
the
about Horcruxes.
The information, yeah.
So clever. Like, the sort of psychopathy, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Really well written.
It is.
Yeah, and this is why we were saying how, like, it's not entirely Slughorn's fault. Like, he was fooled by a master fooler.
Manipulator who was using the fact that he was an educator and he was just a clever student who wanted educating.
Exactly, like the little afflictions, the little stutters and things that he puts
so
in.
Yeah, it's so well done.
Very clever.
And then adult Voldemort is just like, nyah, I'm going to kill you. It's like, nyah. He's a lot more interesting as a child.
And on a sort of
all right, nonce.
Brilliant. As a side note from that as well, I think...
Oh my God, can you stop saying the word side note? I'm already sick of it.
Are they a sidebar?
No, I'm not a sidebar here.
Yeah, let's just a little aside for a moment. Slughorn's differences between the book and the movie, which I'm sure you've discussed at length in the podcast already, I think that's really interesting. Like, in the movie, he's pretty much definitely likable. He's a bit of just a misguided old man.
Mm.
But in the books, he's an absolute ass.
Yeah.
Like, he's a glory-chasing, past his prime.
We adore Book Slughorn. Like, as in terms of as a written character.
Oh, as a character, I see it. Yes,
like,
I agree.
Because a lot
that,
of Harry Potter is filled with, as much as Harry, as Sirius says in Book 5, the world is not split into good people and Death Eaters. Mm. But Harry Potter is filled with black and white characters, and Slughorn is one of the best examples of just, like, this completely grey character.
Very grey.
Yeah, but then I do like what the actor did with him in the film, because I think it's actually interesting you have this morally grey, kind of a shitbag character, but who is just, like, fundamentally likeable.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's also difficult to put across that much in a film that's already stacked with things. Mm. So I think simplifying his character for the film was great, and Jim Broadbent was perfect
Jim Broadbent
casting.
Is just fantastic.
He's great.
I adore him.
Yeah. He's good in everything he's in, which is every British film.
Yeah. So Tom then asks about Horcruxes once the other kids have left. And Harry is impressed, as you said, by how he wheedles the information out of Slughorn. He's like using these little afflictions in his voice and these little pauses and the ums in the right places. And it's all very well thought out. I'm kind of imagining him practicing it in front of a mirror.
100%. Yeah.
So we learn that an Horcrux is an object in which a person has concealed part of their split soul, meaning they cannot die, which makes Harry, which is a good callback, it makes Harry internally think of Voldemort's words from the end of Book 4, I've been further than any man on the pursuit of immortality.
Mm.
And as Slughorn is explaining this, also I kind of forgot that the word Horcrux was for the object, not for the soul.
Like, yes.
That's an interesting distinction. Tom can't hide the fact that this eager, hungry look appears on his face. Mm. And he's like, blah, blah, I want it.
Brilliant.
So he then asks, well, how do you do it? And Slughorn says, it is an act of murder. So it isn't a spell that causes the soul to split. And this is like details I had forgotten about the whole process. Mm. Any murder, not like accidental
doesn't
killing.
He technically say act of evil and then basically was like, so murder.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say if it can't be another act of evil.
Arson.
Big fire.
Really big fire.
I think you'd have to be setting fire to the right thing. Like
wood.
Oliver?
Poor fella.
Well, that's murder if you've set fire to Oliver Wood.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, what other crimes could we do
Do we want to go down that route?
I don't think we want to go down that route.
Could Katie Hopkins create a Horcrux just off her social media presence?
Probably.
Head of the BBC. We know what he's up to.
I think just tax fraud. That would do it. Really minor tax fraud.
I think just the act of actually being a refugee.
Yeah.
That's a fucking joke.
I think writing a series of really inclusive books about wizards and then doing the opposite of what you taught. I think that's one.
Yeah. Yes, I imagine there are some other acts that rip your soul, but it is not a spell that rips your soul. It is the act that rips your soul. And then you use a spell to use this ripping to your advantage, take the piece out of you and conceal it in something else. Which is why this now makes sense, because I had remembered that, like, Hermione says at the end of this book and in book 7, the only way you can, like, rectify a Horcrux yourself is to feel remorse. So presumably if you murder someone and don't do the spell to turn it into a Horcrux, your soul unrips, will knit back together if you feel deep remorse for murdering that
person.
Like
sort of spiritual healing. That's cool. That's a nice way of putting it, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an evil act. It makes sense. So Tom's then like, okay, yeah, but only having two souls? Like, that sounds pointless. Like, someone would just kill you. What about seven? It's the most powerful magical number.
And here's a little thing that Slughorn says at one point. He says death would be preferable to the experience of halving your soul.
Yeah.
I'd love an exploration of that. Like, what is it? Like, is the other half of your soul conscious?
Well, yeah, because Voldemort lives in pain as a torn just part of soul in that tree in Albania for 15 years.
Like, it must be, because I've been watching Severance recently, where the idea is people have an implant in their brain that completely separates their work and home lives. But that means that your work self only ever exists in the office. So they're kind of trapped in this horrible, constant limbo. Right. And it just gets darker and darker. I wonder if the experience of being the bit of Voldemort
in a
ring...
It's like going to work.
It's a lot like being in an office.
It's a lot like experiencing capitalism.
It's the 9-to-5, baby. I just wonder if... Is it just like a constant torture? You're just completely stuck. I'd love an exploration of that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Panicking.
I'm ready for more soup.
Fuck off!
You gotta do this for real, you know? How are you feeling?
Not good.
Okay, so this says red cola, and I fully picked it up and went, red koala?
Actually going to be great if I get on rail replacements later. If anyone tries to sit next to me, rather than just looking hostile like I normally do, I'll just sit there like... Which, to be fair, would probably stop someone sitting next to you regardless of your tongue colour.
Yes, I think
it
would.
This looks like watery period blood.
Brilliant. Is this one of the stronger ones? No, this is 7.5. Some of them are 8% instead.
Oh,
that's red!
Oh, it's so red!
What flavour is it?
Red
cola. Koala.
Red koala, yes.
Oh, I like it! It tastes like Haribo's!
I was going to say it tastes like pick and mix, like cola
balls. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fun. I like it.
Yeah, that's cola bottles. That's quite nice.
So Slughorn, because Tom is asking about splitting his soul
Who's
into seven.
Who's Slughorn?
Snugglehorn.
Thank you.
Because Tom is asking about snipping his soul into seven. Slughorn starts to become a bit sus and scared. He he's getting a bit sus. Are you ticking off your notes?
No.
Oh, right. And then you're like, I've said that.
There's an imposter among them.
I really heard instead of ticking off, I heard taking off, and I was like, I'm so worried about where this sentence is going. What is he taking off?
I'm not taking anything off. Was that Kendrick Lamar impression?
I have no idea.
She just was temporarily possessed by Kendrick Lamar.
We all get it. It all happens. Yeah, it happens once in a while.
He's like, look, Horcruxes are a banned subject at Hogwarts. This is all an academic interest, right? Like, please stop being freaky. Dumbledore hates this. And then they come out of the memory. And
I really want to make a joke that neither of you will understand.
You can make it, someone there might get it.
Yeah.
Okay, to any Buffy watchers, Hannah is to Kendrick Lamar what Ben is to Glory. That's really funny. Please laugh. You don't get it. Please laugh.
So they come out of the memory and Dumbledore says this confirms his theory that he has been working on for many years.
Oh no, I got soup on the sofa.
No! That's going to stain it forever.
And Dumbledore's like, yeah, okay, this confirms it. And Voldemort is the first wizard to ever try breaking his soul into more than two pieces. Like, this is the first time this has ever happened.
Which I find kind of wild.
Yeah.
Surely someone else has tried
that. Yeah, right.
Surely.
It's also a weird notion of, like, if you're that evil and fucked up, but you've got your limits. Once is enough. Like,
I suppose it must be that painful. Like, what we're not understanding is how horrific it is to
but
do
then,
it.
But surely is it not like childbirth, where if it's that painful, your brain kind of like erases
it. Yeah, because every woman does say that and it scares me. They're like, I just forgot what it was like.
Well, that's why I am just never going to have a child.
I don't want to know in the first place.
No, just, you know what? I like my hair. I like my teeth.
Yeah, and then we get the first like bigger bomb drop of the chapter because Harry's like, well, how are we going to find them all? Oh my God. And Dumbledore's like, we've already got two and you got the first one. It was the diary. I would love to know my reaction the first time I read this.
Like, I know. This is like one of the things in Harry Potter that I'm always like, oh shit, yeah, we only just learned this.
Yes, right? Like, it just feels like something we knew all along.
I think I said this one of the last times I was on. I don't think J.K. Rowling had any idea what she was doing with the diary at the time.
No.
I think she just thought it was a fun idea. Like,
oh,
his spooky diary with Voldemort.
But I think she'd come up with the Horcruxes by mid-book four.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yes.
I just don't know how you could, like, start writing a series without knowing.
Well, I think she had the main points, but I don't think when she wrote the diary, she...
I don't know. I disagree because I think that book two's... The reason it's bad is its only purpose is that it's chock full of foreshadowing and it just sets up all of the later books, particularly the last book.
Mm.
So I just... Yeah, I feel like she did know because, like, it all culminates with the Horcruxes.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be, like, one of the first things that you would, like, come up with.
I think she knew there was something weird about his immortality.
I don't think she decided what yet.
I don't think she decided, because there's a lot of hints in the earlier book he was less than human. You know, even Hagrid says in the very, like, third chapter of the book, I don't think he's dead. I think he's out there, less than human, biding his time.
No, but that's literally established in the first one that is true, that, like, he's not dead because, like, there's been something tethering him to life. So she has to have thought of the Horcruxes in book one.
I don't think she thought of Horcruxes. I think she thought that he'd found some way to make himself immortal. Because in book one, he's like a weird, you know, floaty spirit that goes into the back of someone's head. In book two, he's in a diary. I think her idea was just to find new and different ways in each book.
No, I disagree. I think that the Deathly Hallows were last minute.
Yeah, they definitely were.
Yeah.
No question.
But I think that the Horcruxes were like... I think when she conceptualised Harry Potter, I think... And it probably wasn't as fleshed out as it actually ended up being. But I think probably the vague concept was like, yes, like wizard boy, like wizard orphan boy with the big bad who like is immortal and can't be killed because of these like, probably didn't even have a word for it, but because he's like tethered himself to objects. And then like the crux of the series is going to be like, let's hunt down these objects.
But
like,
if she thought that and she wanted that to be the crux of the series, why is she only introducing it towards the end of the sixth book of seven?
Well, no, she's not, because she introduced it in book two.
But then one talks about it for three books.
But because I think I'm kind of in the middle of both of these. I don't agree or disagree with either of you, really. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But I think she wanted the series, kind of apart from book six, which is very linked to book seven, for each book to be somewhat standalone. Now, obviously, they're not completely standalone, but unlike other fantasy series, like Game of Thrones, like Wheel of Time, when you're telling a complete story split into books, I think Harry Potter, some of its uniqueness comes from the fact that it is a very clear story in each book.
Yeah.
Book six is the least complete story by far. And I think she very much wanted that. So those early books do feel like, oh, it's a different way Voldemort can come back. Oh, it's a different way Voldemort can come back.
But like, then I feel like if she had the idea of Horcruxes really set, why wasn't one, correct me if I'm wrong, why wasn't one used in book four to bring him back?
Well, it was. It's his original piece of soul. He doesn't need one to bring him back to life. The reason he's still alive is because he had Horcruxes. So before book four, he's the floating piece of soul. He is... Okay, so I also figured this out later, but I'll work it out now. So I had thought, I think like what you're thinking now, that when the body dies, like when Voldemort was killed the first time, that piece of soul dies.
But it didn't.
And to get back to being a person, he has to go take one of the other bits of soul from a Horcrux. But no, that's not what Dumbledore says. He says that Voldemort's body died, but that piece of soul stayed living, floating about, just waiting.
And this is where the theory comes from, that people think that he flew into the Potter's cat because he was this. Have you not seen this?
No.
Because it's established that the Potters had a cat.
Yeah.
And it's just never mentioned again, like whatever happened to that cat.
Yeah.
So there's a theory out there that like part of how that bit of soul got to Albania in the first place, because it's established that he was doing it by kind of jumping from animal body to animal body and then kept wearing out. But it's like, what happened to that cat? Well, surely when the spell rebounded and his tattered bit of soul was looking for the nearest living thing, it was the cat.
Yeah.
Like obviously a bit went into Harry, but a bit went into the cat.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
This is, but I was also trying to figure out how, because surely if you die, your soul dies. But then I was like, no, actually, it is firmly established in Harry Potter. The idea of souls is inherent in Harry Potter.
Yes.
Like, souls are an object in Harry Potter. And we learn that ghosts are people whose souls have decided to stay on Earth. They are not ready to pass. But that other people, like Harry's parents and like Sirius, chose to pass through the veil onto the next life. So in Harry Potter, in the canon, your body dies, but your soul remains, which is why Voldemort's soul cannot pass to the next life, but he's also not a ghost because it's just a broken bit of soul.
But then, this is now going to be quite, this is like, why didn't they just take the eagles to Mordor? But then, why did he need seven Horcruxes then? Why not just make one and chuck it to the bottom of the ocean?
Well, this is the entire thing.
He's a stupid, stupid
man! He's a big dummy,
it's a stupid
that's
man,
the
but,
answer.
But like, one, because he wanted it to be like linked to, he's just being pretentious.
He's being so pretentious.
I do love that. I have made a note on that, that Voldemort's hubris being his own downfall is hilarious.
We'll get to it later. It's so brilliant.
What I find wild is like, okay, fair enough. You want to defile a bunch of these like really historic antiques with a bit of your soul. Do one as a rock. As a rock.
And chuck like, it. Get out into the sea.
Actually want to be immortal.
Rock in the sea.
Literally.
Or like rock in a box. Or like really tighten it up and then chuck it in. Yeah.
But I think like, I think for me, Harry Potter is this like such incredibly detailed and layered, like, you know, I do criticise her world building a lot where she hasn't fleshed certain bits out, particularly the magic. But for the most part, it's like incredibly fleshed out. And I just don't believe that she would have started writing this series without having worked out like the entire crux of the details of the baddie and his downfall. Like, to me, when she started writing this series, like, she definitely had the beginning, the end, and then probably like key like bits in between. Therefore, she definitely conceptualized the Horcruxes, because I just don't think that you flesh out this like incredibly like detail rich series without fleshing out the biggest plot point.
I hear you.
Like,
I disagree, but I hear you.
Well, one of us is a Harry Potter expert, and one of us is
a Star Wars expert.
What?
When does Jar Jar Binks come into these books again?
Shut up.
No, that's Dobby.
So the diary was a Horcrux all along, and it was also Dumbledore's first confirmation of suspicions. He had thought all along, well, this man must have Horcruxes. The diary confirmed it.
Oh, there must be a TikTok edit of like the moment that Dumbledore, like Harry, like gives him the diary and stuff, and he's
knows.
Like,
he...
that's literally what I was going to say.
Good. Yeah,
he knows,
and I know he knows. Yeah, 100%, 100%.
But Dumbledore was suspicious about the really careless way this diary was treated. He was like, why on earth would this diary just be thrown about unless he had more than one? And this started Dumbledore down this path of thinking that Voldemort had more than one Horcrux.
I do like that this is like what clues him in.
Yes, I do. I think that's really cool.
I think it could have been like a really easy, like, not necessarily like plot hole, but like an easy, like, I can shrug that off to be like, like Dumbledore just, you know, just thought he would have more.
He just knows he's so super evil. Yeah.
Here's one for you though. Why doesn't Dumbledore talk to anyone ever?
Because that's part of Dumbledore's character. He is the chess master. He's brilliant at the chess master.
But if he
and everyone must play his game.
Because if he thinks he can trust the Order of the Phoenix, which, broadly speaking, he can, it's interesting that he didn't talk to any of them at any point.
No, I agree that he's in the right for not doing it because...
Yeah?
I mean, the entire thing is that James and Lily thought that they could trust everyone and they couldn't.
He's in the order.
Yeah.
Okay.
No matter how much you do, the more people know, the more chance that Voldemort is going to find out. And the thing is, you might trust them, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to get kidnapped by Voldemort and he can use legitimens or whatever.
And also, it's a really important plot point for Harry's development in Book 7, because in Book 7 he ends up resenting Dumbledore massively for always keeping his cards close to his chest, for never telling things, because although...
Keeping his what, sorry?
Cards close to his chest, for never telling everyone things, because although Harry, like, doesn't tell loads of people, he has never not told Ron and Hermione a bit of information. Whereas Dumbledore, because Harry wants to share it with them, he feels he needs to, whereas Dumbledore was never like that. Yeah. It's a key difference between them.
Yeah. And it's also like a key part of the plot that Voldemort cannot know that Dumbledore and Harry know, because if he did, one, he would increase the already intense security on them.
Yeah.
And two, he probably then would, you know, make a rock and throw it into the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dumbledore.
She did the thing. Go get the grapper.
I'm not doing it with grapper.
Grab another can of soup while you're there.
I hate you. Okay.
In the break, we all had sex.
Yep. If the cameras change loads, doesn't matter.
It just, got rocked about by the wild limb flailing.
It did.
Yeah.
So, Dumbledore... You know, I got up to take a shot.
Off your pop.
I'm going to kill myself. Can I save it for next time I get up, please?
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
I made the rules. I'm the official co-host. Neither of us would have realised this is a thing.
I know.
I kind of thought you'd gone and done it, so you could have kept quiet then.
I didn't do the shot. We just paused the recording, swapped the battery, got new alcohol, went to the toilet. Also, I could get up and have a shot and didn't.
I've changed my mind. Do the shot.
Yeah.
No, please. No, I just got comfortable.
Do the shot.
Do the shot. Do the roar.
Do the what?
The roar.
The roar?
Do the roar.
What?
Do the roar.
What are you saying?
Shrek. You must be like the biggest Shrek fan.
Yeah.
Do the roar.
I don't remember that bit.
The little kid. Do the roar. Do the roar.
I was like, do the roar? What does that mean? That's not a shot.
This
you
is a
put
shot
a drip.
Glass. This is a double size shot.
No,
glass.
You literally
it's up
went
halfway.
Yeah,
it's up halfway on a double shot glass.
I put a little bit more in.
Yeah, she literally did like a drop.
I'm not sitting back down to do this.
Check the glass is empty. I don't trust the bitch.
That is empty. She's done it. God, that grapper is truly awful.
Okay, so Lord, I always did it again. Hold on.
Deep breath, deep breath.
Dumbledore, Voldemort, Dumbledore, Voldemort, Dumbledore, Voldemort, Dumbledore, Voldemort.
Hermione.
Dumbledore says that Voldemort has
grown
less human.
I feel like saying Lord absolutely counts as saying Lord Voldemort.
I was actually reading out my own note. The problem is I screwed myself over because all I wrote was Lord V has grown less human, but I need to give more context than that to the podcast.
Sure.
He's grown less human. And this made me question, like, yes.
Who's grown less human?
Voldemort has grown less human.
Mm-hmm.
And this made me question that, yes, he has, because it isn't even that he has a seventh of his soul. That's not true, because the first time he ripped his soul in half, he has half a soul. Then the second time, he rips his original half of the soul in half, it's a quarter, and continue and continue and continue until you get...
Oh, 1/128th of a soul.
Wait, really? I was expecting it to be 1/40th or something.
Half,
yeah.
Quarter,
yeah.
8th, 16th, 32nd, 64th, and then Harry, 128th.
And that's the thing as well, like, Harry only has, like, a little, like, sprinkling of his soul.
Which I guess makes sense, but it can't be perfectly fractional, I don't think. Just because of that, surely he hasn't gotten rid of 127, 128ths of his soul.
But it must be.
It must be.
But it's not, do we know that it's half? Or is it just a bit?
I guess not. I guess it never says you... The thing is, we're saying it like it is a real thing. It isn't. Even though in Harry Potter it exists as a method to keep you alive, it exists in both the good and the bad. Like, souls are inherent. Mm. It's not like... I'm imagining, like, the sole of a foot where you just rip it down the middle. It is like a...
Ew! Yeah, what? Oh, my God!
What?
Well, I was imagining it, like, sole shape, like the sole of a foot shape.
When have you ever ripped a foot in half?
I didn't say that.
That is what you said.
I'm sorry, but, like, the mental image of, like, ripping the sole of a foot in half has made me
I should have said, I don't mean of a foot. Yeah. I meant, like, an insert. Like
an insole.
Yeah, like an insole.
What, like on Reddit?
Yes.
I meant like the insole that goes in a shoe.
I hate that now with video, when I make a shit joke, they can see how proud I am of myself.
So yeah, it's like when you rip a foot in half. Yeah.
But it's not like that.
I do that all the time.
A soul
time.
Is an abstract concept, so no, we don't know that it's just in half and half and half and half, because it is not it's not an organ. That's not what's happening.
Yeah. He could just be tearing a little corner off at a time.
Yeah,
that's still treating it as an object, but it is not an object. It's a concept.
It's a concept, but the way it's described treats it like an object.
I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. So he's 148th.
128th. In theory, that's not very much. We're just, you know, he does it like a snake now, so I guess that's that.
Yeah.
The thing is, it does, like, blur the boundaries of, like, oh, it's his soul, it's this, like, hypothetical thing, blah, 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 but then for some reason affects his appearance.
Mm.
Like...
Yeah. But we don't know, it's not the other... This is what annoys me about the fact he decided to become evil and snake-like looking before he went into the cauldron. I would have much preferred it if he looked just like a man, like a handsome man, and then he comes out the cauldron looking... boiled and burned.
And like we've had the discussion before, it's so much more interesting having him either be like a normal looking or like attractive looking villain 100%. As opposed to this like pantomime level. But like as we discussed, he got addicted to buccal fat removal.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
So I feel like it's the same thing, like path that they kind of went down with the Fantastic Beasts films of this like pantomime evil looking villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but why? You have to give a reason.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and it's like so gross to be like, oh well, he was ugly, so he was evil.
Yeah,
duh.
Even though very he started off as extremely handsome.
Mm. Question.
Tell me what you think about me.
I might be a little early here, but we were they start talking about what all the Horcruxes are, and one of them's the diary. Great reveal.
You're too early for my note. You're two pages too early.
Neil's being premature.
But the story of my life. But what Dumbledore says is that the diary is proof that he's the heir of Slytherin. How is that proof?
Because he's able to open the Chamber of Secrets and only the heir of Slytherin can do that.
But the diary isn't the proof, then.
Yeah, it is.
Why is the diary the proof?
Because it's the bit of his soul encased in there and only the bit of his soul can open the Chamber of Secrets, because only Voldemort can open the Chamber of Secrets.
Right, I thought what he was saying was inherently...
It's written in the diary. Dear diary, I'm the heir of Slytherin.
Like, it's signed at the front by Salazar or something. You know what I mean?
Dear diary, today I found out I'm the heir of Slytherin.
Yeah, no.
No, only Slytherin's heir can open... Actually, that's not true. But this isn't true, because anyone who speaks parcel tongue can open the Chamber of Secrets.
So the heir of Slytherin thing is actually just a myth, isn't it?
No, but it's kind of hinted at in the books that only distant heirs of Slytherin can speak parcel tongue.
But they were myth-taken.
Yeah. It's like a double. That's a double.
She's so deep in the jokes.
I'm just really funny. Like someone said, I think, was it a review or a message we got? Someone said that I'm the funniest person they've ever, like, I don't know, like, perceived. And I'm like, you really need to meet more people.
So many people.
So many.
You need to back us up.
Yeah, no, sorry, you're hilarious. You're hilarious.
Like, I can be funny. Yeah,
no, I am hilarious.
No, I am.
But I'm most definitely not the most funny person that anyone, unless they, like, a Madeleine McCann and they've been in a basement for the past how many years?
Oh my God.
Dark joke.
No, she's dead.
We found her. She's in your reviews.
It's been me all along.
Madeleine McCann thinks Charlie is funny.
Claim. Put that on your posters.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It's going on the CV, mate.
There we go. Harry starts completely panicking. He's like, how am I meant to find 7 objects? That's mad. And Dumbledore's like, 6.
Yeah, Dumbledore's also immediately like, yeah, I know what they all are. Here we go.
Here we go.
We've got, yeah. We've got the diary.
But also, yeah, he points out the thing that people constantly forget when they're trying to count the Horcruxes, that one has to stay inside Voldemort for there to be 7 pieces. Yes. Like, there has to be the one inside him, which is why Harry is the accidental 8th, not the accidental 7th.
I do feel like they reveal all of them really quickly here.
I suppose it's been Dumbledore's project for years.
I know, but I feel like they could have... This is the thing, if they'd introduced the idea maybe one book earlier, they could have, you know...
But I don't know how you ever would be like, oh, yeah, I've worked out what 2 of them are, I'm going to tell you now, and I actually know what the rest are, but I'm not going to tell you
them
now.
Well, that's
now.
The thing, we could have the experience of him figuring out... That,
well, I have the ring, like, at the start of this book. Yeah. It's just that we're not immediately told about it.
And I kind of like the trope of, like, Dumbledore holding all these cards close to his chest, and then Harry's panicking and Dumbledore goes, nah, I've already done the work.
Go. Already, like, got the lot here. Yeah.
I don't know. And his reasoning makes sense, like, as he talks through each object.
Yeah. Something that I was thinking about is this concept of, like, 7 being the most magical, powerful number, because it's like, obviously it's not just exclusive to J.K. Rowling. This is like an entire, like, established, like, belief.
What's that thing called with the numbers? Eniology or something? What's the thing with the numbers?
I don't know.
What I was thinking about is, like, whether this is actually true, that the fact that he split it into 7 made it in some way more powerful.
Right, yeah.
Because it's, like, a very easy thing to say, like, oh, 7 is the most powerful number, but, like, what actual... Is this just a belief and it doesn't actually...
I've always assumed it's a myth. I've always assumed it's superstition.
Yeah. Mm. Or, like, does it actually in some way strengthen in the same way that, like, triangles are strong? Like, I don't know how my brain's connecting that, but do you know what I mean? Well, is there something actually...
It could go both ways, because on one hand, I've always thought it's a myth. Like, he's quite into superstition and things like that. But on the other hand, he never really has 7 pieces of his soul because he creates Harry.
Well, this is the point that missing. I was making.
Yeah. So he only ever has 6 or 8. So is it that if he'd ever had that magical 7, is that what you mean? Like, would it have been all
powerful?
Yeah,
that's literally the point that I was trying to make, is the fact that he tried to have 7.
Right.
And whilst I kind of like the idea that it is bullshit and this is more some kind of like religious symbolism, right, like, you know, my cross necklace that I have because I'm so deeply religious.
You are. You love Jesus.
I really, yeah, me and Jesus are really tight. Or is it actually that there is actually some kind of magical strengthening if you do something in 7? And therefore, the fact that he creates this accidental one, does this actually have some real world implications in the fact that he does like one too many and therefore weakens himself? Because, like, whilst I could buy into that for, like, you know, like magic reasons, like it happens and if you want to try and explain that in more detail, you can. But, like, I also kind of like the idea that it's just kind of like bullshit,
yeah,
you know.
Although it would then explain, once Harry destroys the diary, why his rise to power then suddenly becomes a lot quicker, because he then has 7.
But good does he point. Have 7 or because
no,
it's not
no,
like
no. He then has, oh my god, okay,
no, he's got 7 then.
No, because he doesn't do Nagini till after he comes out the cauldron.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And also, right, it's not like, as far the way I interpret it at least, is it's not, I don't know, I guess you could interpret it in different ways, but the way I interpret it is, when one gets destroyed, that piece of soul gets destroyed. It's not that it, like, zaps back in to the person,
the soul gets
like
destroyed.
In the Scooby-Doo movie.
Mm.
Yeah, like, so therefore it's still that he doesn't have 7 pieces, like, he still had, like, 8 pieces, but just
one's
one
gone.
Of them's destroyed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite interesting to think about whether it did in some way, even though you think, oh, but he's got one more, so he should be, that's, you know, one more life.
If he doesn't do Nagini till after he gets out of the cauldron, he does have 7.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, but I suppose if his original piece doesn't have a body, does it count as one?
Oh, boy. Just on the topic of Nagini.
Oh, no.
No, we're not going to talk about
it. We're not going to acknowledge the stupid thing.
We're not going to acknowledge the Asian woman.
We're not acknowledging it.
That's weird. But really sad in general. Like, poor Snake.
I know.
That's horrible.
I know.
Yeah. The snake who is also actually a woman.
No, it isn't.
Thank you for that, Joanne.
We're going to do an ad again.
Woo! Advert. No, you say again. This again. Is the first time we've done one.
Ooh, time travel.
We're going to do an ad one
no,
time.
No, it's the first time we've done it.
This is
no,
the
that's
first
why
ad.
I'm saying, ooh, time travel.
We're going to do an ad.
It's ad time.
It's ad time. Goblet of ads.
It will return shortly after these messages that are also us.
Today we have a very exciting ad because someone has let us talk about alcohol in an ad.
Huge.
In an alcohol-themed podcast.
Talk about wine in a podcast called Goblet of Wine.
They clearly did not see that one-star AI review that said that we know nothing about wine.
So, today's episode is brought to you by Wine 52.
What are you doing?
Showing the wine. There we go.
There you go. You've got your screenshot for the YouTube thumbnail.
Great.
Wine 52. Oh, are we trying?
I accidentally drank the wine.
Okay, let's do that now. We're doing a live tasting. Go.
You put wine in my hand and I drank it.
Ooh.
That's weird because I only drink like dirt cheap on offer, like £5 wine.
Yeah, and I'm
and
like,
this is not that.
Yeah, this is genuinely a
that's
really
all I've got
good
to
wine.
Say. It's a lovely wine. Okay, so we'll all like the wine. That's
really
a good start
good
to
wine.
This ad.
So essentially, Wine 52, it's related to Beer 52, which mm-hmm. both of us have
yes.
paid for in the past.
Yes.
I actually bought my dad like 3 months of Beer 52.
Mm.
I think like last Father's Day.
And I've been a subscriber for years.
And we contacted the company and they kindly said, would you like to talk about the like offshoot of Beer 52, Wine 52, because of how well it fits with the podcast? And we were like, yes, definitely.
I will say we have set the bar for enjoying the wine so low because it's like, yes, this isn't dragon soup.
That's true.
Yeah, the comparison alcohol is not good here. So Wine 52 is a subscription wine company in the UK. So every month you get sent a box of 3 bottles of wine. You can pick an all white wine case, an all red wine case, or a mixed case. So we got sent the mixed case, and also each month is themed to a certain country or region or like topic or something like that. So this box that we're drinking from, obviously if you guys order it, it'll be different, but just to talk about it, this box is the Georgian wines. I know nothing about Georgia to add to that point.
It sure do be a country and also a state.
Yes. And they make really good wine, as it turns out.
Not only do you get the 3 bottles of wine, you get a magazine
snacks.
All about the 3 bottles and snacks. I've
ooh,
got
corn.
Fava beans barbecue.
I want bean. You have corn.
Oh, wow.
They also send you snacks and a magazine all about the wine. And basically, if you sign up to Wine 52, you get a box of wines every month, but you can cancel and pause at any time. So the lovely people over at the company have given you guys an offer where you get the first case for free. You just have to pay for postage. The postage is $8.95 for that first box because obviously it's heavy. It's wine bottles. But you only have to cover that and you're going to get a case for free and you can pause or cancel at any time. So you could try it out. If 3 bottles last you more than a month, you could go for like a 1 month on, 1 month off system. And it's a great way to try different wines, especially I think for people like us who, as we've both just admitted, know nothing about wine.
Yeah.
It's quite a good way to try different like regions and types, and also the magazine will give you information about them so you can pretend to be knowledgeable.
And they put a lot of care into their curation as well. Like, they're not just randomly picking a country in the map and going, that one. They think about it, they find a good local producer.
Yeah.
You guys, if you want to try it, unfortunately this is a UK ad only, but for any of our UK people, you can get your first box for $8.95. You can pause and cancel after that at any time if you go to www.wine52, and that's the numbers 52, not the words. The link will be in the description. .com/goblet. So that's www.wine52.com/goblet to get your first 3 bottles of wine for $8.95. I mean, the
good.
Cheapest wine in Tesco is fiver.
You'll struggle to get a better deal than that for 3 bottles.
Oh yeah,
of wine,
you
frankly.
Really sound like you're doing it. You're struggling to get a better deal than lads.
I'm not goofing. This is real. This is real enthusiasm.
Thank you also so much for Wine 52 for working with us for this episode. We were very excited.
Thank you.
Ad break over.
Welcome back to Goblet of Wine.
Goblet.
Where we actually have goblets of wine.
Mango pink lemonade.
Oh, this is the one you were enthusiastic about, Charlie.
Yeah, I love pink lemonade. I love mango.
Well, get ready for both of them in one probably not very nice drink.
I think the wine in this is also going to mix really well together, considering I've still got a glass of wine left as well.
Hell yeah.
Oh, it's pink. No. Oh my god, I'm not going to be able to drink that. That is awful.
I think that's nice.
Jeez. Ugh. Oh, that is acrid. Do you like that?
It tastes like blended up candy floss. So Dumbledore reveals that not only has one Horcrux been destroyed, the diary, Marvolo's ring, seen in the previous memories, was also a Horcrux and has also been destroyed, and that's how he injured his hand. Although I noticed he doesn't actually say how he injured his hand, because also we don't find that out till the end of book 7. So Harry then points out rightly what we're all thinking, that Horcruxes could be anything. An old tin can, a piece of rubbish, and you could just throw it anywhere.
I love that the first thing he thinks of, an old tin can. There's something really
an
funny
old
about
tin
that.
Can.
Sounds like a line from an old play or something.
An old tin can, an old tin can.
If you did make your Horcrux a random object, right, and you can't just do the like stone into the sea thing, but it had to be some other kind of random object, what would you do?
So something non-biodegradable.
Yep.
That I would send to landfill.
Mm-hmm. No, but what I would do, an old piece of Lego in a Lego job lot that I'd donate to a random charity shop.
Very
incredible. Because not only, if someone does for some reason throw it out, it's not going to go anywhere. But also, he's going to throw out Lego.
I suppose the problem with any of these is the reason why Voldemort doesn't do it is that you can't check on it. You are trusting, if you only have one, that it hasn't been destroyed in any way. And as soon as you decide to put it somewhere that you check on it, it becomes something special and personal, because you're not just going to go check on a tin can buried in soil, are you?
True. True.
So I get it from that perspective, wanting to check on it.
You could do in the Lego movie, make like a Lego city, and it's just one block.
Oh, yeah, you could gift it to Legoland and get them to put it in one of their exhibition pieces.
Yeah. Or, okay, if I had the Harry's Invisibility Cloak, I'd sneak in and put it in, like, some sort of historical monument that's not allowed to be touched. Like, if you put something, like, in or on the Statue of Liberty or something, or, like, it's never going
to
be touched.
Make it
anyone.
A tiny bit of paint and add it to the Mona Lisa.
Yes, exactly.
Or just make it the Mona Lisa. Sorry, what am I on about?
Lisa. Just make it the Mona Lisa.
But
yeah, Dumbledore's
Neil's
like...
not answered.
Oh, sorry.
I said something biodegradable. Something non-biodegradable.
Yeah, I was going to say he makes it an apple
That's
core.
Not an answer.
No, I'm trying to think of what the best
thing
would
be. But also, I feel
be.
Like there's an implication that if it becomes a Horcrux, it's no longer going to biodegrade. Like, if you need to destroy it with, like, the sword or like...
fiendy fire.
Yeah, it's not just going to biodegrade. And actually, if it did, surely that would make it... harder to
okay, so at some point in book 7 they say, unlike something, and I can't remember what, a Horcrux is dependent on the object.
Yes,
so the object has to be destroyed. So if it's something that biodegrades, I assume the Horcrux dies.
But if it can't just be destroyed in a normal way, surely it would just stop it biodegrading.
I think though, because if Nagini is a Horcrux and you can just, you know, you can just kill a snake, can't you?
Yeah, no, but the point is that they have to use sword to kill the snake.
But when he puts his soul into rats and things like that, they do just die and he has to flit about and find something else, which implies that it doesn't give them extra longevity. The biodegradable object does die and biodegrade.
Which makes it even stupider that he put it in Nagini.
I know.
It just doesn't really work, does it? If you start deconstructing it a little bit.
Most of Harry Potter.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, we've thought about it for more than 5 minutes.
Oh, no.
But then it doesn't really make sense, because they try other ways to kill the locket and it doesn't work. But you could, in theory, just smash a fucking locket.
I think what would make more sense is if, when you create a Horcrux, it creates a duplicate of an object. As in, like, if you wanted to make a Horcrux out of, you know, Ravenclaw's diadem... what actually happens is it creates a near enough, you can't tell the difference, duplicate of it that you can then replace
it
with.
Oh my god, you know what would be so funny?
Go on.
Is if it created a duplicate of it, but it created like the Wish.com version.
AliExpress diadem.
Yeah.
Like, you know when they're like, oh, this lovely knit jumper, and someone online orders it and it's just like a t-shirt with the knit print on.
Yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But Dumbledore is like, nah. No. Voldemort has an obsession. Nah, mate. Voldemort has an obsession with trophies and legacy that is his own undoing, essentially. He chose significant objects, and not just significant objects. He wanted to change pieces of history. He wanted to change an object. That is going to make so much noise, you two!
What do you mean?
Sorry.
He wanted to. But the thing is, it fits, although we're all like Voldemort's stupid, he is, but it fits well with Voldemort's personality that we've learned in these next six books, because he came from nothing, because he had to learn who his family was. He is obsessed with symbols of greatness, and he wants to have, I think in the end of the day, he wants to have a legacy more than he wants to actually rule. Like, I don't... Part of me thinks he doesn't... This is what I've always said is, does he actually care about oppressing muggles and muggleborns that much? No. I always think it's a stepping stone to recruit the easiest people. What he wants is a legacy as a ruler, a legacy as someone in the Wizarding World.
This is what the Conservative Party do.
Like, I was about to say.
Yes.
It's literally... Absolutely. They're, like, demonising, like, immigrants, the working class, refugee, like, all of these, like, minority and oppressed groups is literally just a vehicle to, like, give themselves a platform.
I think there are a number of politicians over the last 10 years where you can say they cared more about their own legacy than anything else.
100%.
They just wanted to have something they could write in the history books about them, you know?
Which, annoyingly, is what makes Joe's writing so powerful. This isn't... Although there's a lot of criticism over Voldemort's character not being, like, the greatest villain, this is actually a good thing about his... Crunch it. That's an ad, baby. What word did you use earlier? Because I really liked it. I was talking about Voldemort's obsession with trophies and legacy. You wrote...
Hubris.
Hubris. Love that word. Great word. Well
done. Do you want to know a funny thing? I had to Google to double check what it meant. Because I was pretty sure I knew, but before I made a fool of myself.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. No, that's a great word.
I'm like, I absolutely know what this word means.
But I'm going to double check.
I am going to Google it, though.
Because these listeners would take the piss out of us if we used a word. Hubris was the point of that discussion.
Sorry?
Hubris. don't we're moving on. Don't either of you sit there, record the podcast, don't say anything.
Say it again.
No, hubris. What am I saying?
Hubris.
That's what I said.
Yeah, exactly.
But hubris.
It's two syllables.
Hubris.
You're saying it like humorous, but like hubris.
Oh man, all of that hubris.
Wait, what's this?
Hubris.
That's what I said, hubris. I just said the same thing as you!
Je?
What did you just say?
Hugh.
Bris. Hubris.
There we go. Je m'appelle.
Je m'appelle. Wait, so it's not hubris?
No.
No, for God's sake.
I like hubris even more, though. Hubris. It's like the Hoobs. Remember the Hoobs?
Oh, no, I'm going to wet myself.
That's some great remembering.
Oh, no, I'm going to wet myself.
Put up a clip of the Hoobs while Hannah pisses.
Okay, I'm going to try to get to the next point.
Hubris, or whatever you were saying.
So we're talking about Voldemort's Horcruxes, and yes. Dumbledore is talking about how he chose significant objects. And yes. Dumbledore says, can you think of any other significant objects? And Harry's like, oh my God, yes, the cup and the locket. I understand why, finally, we've been going through all these memories. They're Horcruxes, right? And Dumbledore's like, yes, of course.
What was the cup again? Sorry to interrupt.
The Hufflepuff's cup.
Of course, carry on. Yes.
And then Dumbledore says...
I love what this implies about Hufflepuff, like the OG person. The fact that...
He's just got a cup.
Someone had a sword. Someone had a fucking pretty necklace. Someone had like a pretty
tiara. A crown,
tiara.
Basically, yeah. Cup.
Someone had a wine glass. Like, icon.
Cup.
He's just having little shots out of it.
Mm.
She, it's Helga.
Oh, yeah.
I'm being sexist.
I forgot it was Helga.
It's Helga. Dumbledore starts talking about how he thinks that Voldemort...
I'm out of soup.
I was really trying to get to the next point.
Yeah, no,
I
know. Tell us about his hubris.
Yeah.
I'm going to the loo. You can get your own
fucking
soup.
Neil, serve me soup.
Cup and locket.
The hubris.
The cup and locket are Horcruxes.
Yes.
And then Dumbledore theorises that Voldemort wanted to make four
of them. I've got my wine.
Oh, yeah, I've still got wine.
I could have
done
without the soup.
Goblet of wine. Dumbledore keeps talking about
how... Do you want some more corn?
I'd love some more corn, thank you.
Aren't you the one who wants to get home?
Hannah, do you want some corn?
It's very good. It's good corn.
It is good corn. It's corn.
Ow, I bit my tongue.
A big lump of knobs. It has the juice.
It has the juice.
I can't imagine a more beautiful thing.
Hannah, make your point.
Yes.
The you can't let him onto the time travel.
The hubris.
The locket and the cup of horcruxes. Dumbledore theorises that Tom Riddle wanted to make an item of each of the four founders of Hogwarts a horcrux so that that would be like four key horcruxes.
Mm-hmm.
But Dumbledore says, well, he didn't get any from Gryffindor because the only known relic of Gryffindor is the sword, and that's in front of me. And what annoys me is he's like, I don't know about Ravenclaw, it's a maybe. He doesn't even mention the diadem as a possibility because Dumbledore definitely knows that it is an object which possibly existed. Now, we learn in book 7 that it disappeared thousands of years ago. But it annoys me that Dumbledore at this point doesn't even mention that that's like the most known item, that that's the strongest possibility. He just says something of Ravenclaw's. There's no way he doesn't know it. And it annoys me that that's kept back until the end of book 7 because it's just like withholding information that could be useful.
It's also really weird, the concept that these people just had like the one possession.
I mean, I suppose it's what survived.
Okay, no, but surely, like, Hufflepuff's cup was in a set of glassware. Surely. Like, she didn't just own...
You big sexist.
No, I've just decided that now Hufflepuff is trans and,
fair enough.
Henry Hufflepuff.
Yeah. They wouldn't just have one cup. So it would be a set of cups. Like, imagine, okay, Hufflepuff invites you over for dinner, and they're like, do you want a drink? And you're like, oh, yes, please. And they're like, well, I only own one cup.
I never imagined it as a cup you actually drink out of it. I just imagined it as a decorative piece.
I pictured it as like a grail.
I pictured it like literally like a like Stella branded like pint glass.
That's a nice cup, to be fair.
Yeah.
I love a Stella glass.
But like, either way, it's like, why is there just one object that's been like handed down and associated with these people? And this leads me on to another question.
What would ours be?
What would your relics be?
Such a good question.
Misu.
No.
A stuffed Misu.
No. Oh, no.
That's a good question. What am I most protective over the things I own?
I don't even... I guess it could be most protective over, but also what just, like, sums you up?
It's genuinely a really good question.
Or, like, something valuable, maybe.
Oh, okay, then my giraffe painting. That is both valuable and meaningful to
me. That's very Zac Efron poster in Starkid. I forgot what Starkid were called. You know that joke when they're like, the Horcrux is the Zac Efron poster?
Yeah. That's mine. I have this painting of giraffes that my parents bought the year I was born from like a local artist to where they live. Turns out it gained a lot of value as I grew up, but they bought it for me when I was born, but also bought me a giraffe stuffed toy when my mum found out she was pregnant. Like, they bought both at the same time, gave me the stuffed toy and kept this giraffe painting. But then very kindly, when we moved out, they were like, oh, this was always meant for you, have this. And I was like, it's increased in value, I can't take it. They were like, nope, we bought it randomly when you were born. It's yours.
I will say
quite an important thing. And then I became obsessed with giraffes throughout my childhood and ended up getting a giraffe tattoo.
Mm. Yeah, and I will say the little giraffe fella over there has been giving me eyeballs this entire recording. Aww. And I'm about to start a fight with it.
There's two. Do you mean the shorter one with the purple eyes?
The one looking directly at me.
Yeah,
hello.
Yeah.
But yeah, my giraffe painting would be mine.
Okay, Neil?
Mine is probably either that stuffed dog up there with the hat.
Oh, yeah.
That's a shit one, no offence.
Wow. Aww,
hey. He loves that.
I'm sorry, no, it's just not going to survive many generations,
true,
is it?
Or just any one of my records.
Oh, God, I hate
no,
you.
No, because then that's, like, within the collection. Like, that's not gonna go anywhere.
What's yours, then?
That's around for it. Yeah, what's yours? Give me something better than that. Yeah.
Ah, you asked the fucking question!
That's the worst when people do that. It's like, oh, what do you think of this? And then you get to them and they're like, oh, I don't know, actually.
So I'm
and then
not,
they sort of stare mysteriously
I'm
into the
just
distance.
Not allowed to ask questions.
No, good not unless you have an answer.
The only thing that comes to mind, and it's not like valuable monetarily, but it's something that I guess would be like close to me and like sums me up, and something that I've kept for like a significant majority of my life, is this book called Toe by Toe, which was what was given to like dyslexic people. That it was essentially like a workbook that like taught me to read. So it's something that took me like 2 or 3 years to complete. So it's literally just a book of me like having to spell things. So it'd be kind of a shit one. But like, ah, yes, this is a relic of someone when they were like 10 years old, like spelling cat.
To be fair, however much J.K. Rowling is a shithead, based on what I've collected and who I am as a person, if you were to list things I'd save in a fire, I would grab my original 7 hardback copies of Harry Potter.
I think I'd throw them in. I'd be like, burn!
No, like, I'm very protective over my original 7 copies because they're literally the ones I read growing up.
Mine have all just fallen apart, like, absolutely.
Yours are on the way. But, like, it's not good. It's not in a good state.
Literally, most of mine, like, the OG ones, they don't have covers now.
I've just thought of another thing, actually, which probably is better than both of the ones I said. The Kalimba, the one that's on the shelves out by the alcohol.
I know what it is now. It's little plunky plinky.
It's
thing.
A little like ding 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 ding, like thumb piano thing.
Oh, cute.
That was in my granny's house, and it was like when we cleared it out, it was like, that's the thing I want.
Yeah.
Because my granddad used to travel around. God knows where he got it from. This is like some random country.
Okay, to be fair, this has actually reminded me. My grandma has a music box that plays Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it's not mine yet, and I haven't asked for it because my grandma's now doing a post-it note what you want.
I hate when they do that. It's so awkward.
So I am actually going to text my mum right now that I want the music.
Apart from I took a potato masher and a saucepan, so maybe I'm the one in the wrong here. But yeah, it basically annoys me that Dumbledore doesn't even mention the diadem, because I just feel like even if he had a suspicion or even if it was just a thought process, he should have shared that with Harry.
One that annoys me, actually, when I was reading this is he completely dismisses the sword, and that's fair enough because I'm sure he's tested it.
Yeah.
But why doesn't he say it can't be the sword because I've tested it, rather than just being like, and the only relic of Gryffindor is here. Like, he doesn't mention that
he's tested it.
But he doesn't, he says it in such a smug way. I think I wrote my last note here is Dumbledore is being an ass in this scene.
Oh my god, that's your last note? I've got another page and a half.
Oh no, I've got things between.
Right, okay. I was gonna say I've got another three
just
pages.
As a general point, he's just being an ass in this scene.
Oh god, yeah. But he's finally getting to reveal his major plan and is all his workings. He's allowed to be an ass.
There's no need to be such a dick about it. Like, come on.
Okay, guys, and that is where we are going to cut this episode off because we recorded for a total of 4 hours and this is roughly the halfway point. Charlie is about to just kind of exit the frame and walk away to pee. So we're going to cut it off here and you will hear the second half of this chapter with Neil in the next episode where we are extremely drunk and extremely hyper. So look forward to another one of Goblet of Wine's most drunk episodes ever.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram.
We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do.
This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Patrick, Nick, Michael, Meg, Kylie, Cara and Molly, Jasmine, Florian, Ash and Arthur.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind the scenes content and our Discord.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.